There is a lot to be said about knowing what you're doing. And knowing what you're doing truly and wholly only comes by experience. I remember years ago when I was working in the landscape industry, how when I would be on a landscape job, one of the things that I learned was not to waste any time, not to waste any trips from my truck to the planning areas or the working areas around the houses where I would be working. And what I'm talking about is, in a lot of cases, I knew what was coming up in the job. I knew what was coming up in the next few minutes, the next half hour or so. So on my way back to my truck, I would always take something back that I didn't need, and I would bring something that I was going to need. You see, so I didn't walk unpurposely. There was a purpose in everything that I did like that. And the only way that I learned that was by experience, knowing what was coming up and knowing what I was doing and what I was going to do. Well, this is one of the great things about our God. God has all the experience. You know, there is no situation in life in which it is God's first rodeo, so to speak. God was there before the creation of the heavens and the earth. He's been through every situation. He already knows what's coming. He prepares for what's coming, and he works all things for the good of those who love them, those who love him, you see, because God knows what he's doing. And it's evident as we read the stories of how he takes care of his people. The conditions have gone from bad to worse in Israel 3 to 350 years after his people had crossed the Jordan River and entered the Promised Land. Things had gone from bad to worse. The priesthood was corrupt. The sacrificial system had become an abomination to God. And now, what was worse, the Philistines attacked Israel and they won. And they took the Ark of the Covenant of God. They took the presence of God and the power of God from God's own people. Now, if we remember in the story here, the Israelites went out to fight against the Philistines. The Philistines beat them, so the Israelites went and they brought the Ark of the Covenant from Shiloh out to the battlefield. And the Philistines joined forces and were strong and worked hard together, and they fought, and the Israelites were defeated, and the Ark of God was captured. We learned that Eli, the priest's two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, had died in the battle. And when word got back to Shiloh, to Eli, that not only had the people lost the battle, but the Ark of God had been captured, he fell over dead. What this meant to the people was a sense of hopelessness. The Philistine gods were greater than the God of Israel. They would now be the laughing stock of all the people in that area. Their God was gone. They had no power. It was definitely a really hopeless and low situation for the nation. But after the Philistines had captured the Ark of God, it tells us in our text today from 1 Samuel chapter 5, after the Philistines had captured the Ark of God, they took it from Ebenezer to Ashdod. Ebenezer was where they had done battle. They took it to Ashdod, about 20 miles southwest now. They carried the Ark into Dagon's temple, and they set it beside Dagon. Now, Dagon was a Philistine vegetation god. Some sources say that he was a fertility god, and others say a fish god, but that comes from the translation. But he was their head god. In ancient writings, sometimes Baal is referred to as Dagon's son. So Dagon was the powerful god, the almighty god that they had him standing in their temple, the Philistines did. When the people of Ashdod rose early the next day, there was Dagon fallen on his face on the ground before the Ark of the Lord. Dagon fallen on his face before the Ark of the Lord. They took Dagon and they put him back in his place. But the following morning, when they arose, there was Dagon, fallen on his face on the ground before the ark of the Lord. Now his head and his hands had been broken off, and they were lying on the threshold, and only his body remained. So that's why to this day, the time of this writing, the priests who enter Dagon's temple don't step on the threshold. They considered it a judgment against them if they would, and bad things would happen to them. Now, I want you to look at this, what's going on here. The Israelite people had lost their God, so to speak, when the ark went into the possession of the Philistines. The Philistines carried the ark into their temple and set it beside Dagon, sort of a spoil from war, a trophy, so to speak. Look at what we did. We captured the God of Israel. And as a mockery, they brought the ark into the temple and stood beside Dagon as if to say, here, this is our God, and he's bigger than you, God. We won and you lost. But what happened when they went into the temple, there was Dagon fallen on his face before the ark of the Lord in a position of submission. Is what that meant in that day. When someone fell on their face before another, it was a position of submission. Their Dagon was submitting to the God of Israel. So they stood him back up saying, we'll have none of this. And they went in the next morning, and not only was he lying on his face, his head and his hand were severed and laid there. In that culture of that day, heads and hands were battlefield trophies. When he captured the enemies, you desecrated them, you destroyed them, you cut off their heads and cut off their hands, and you carried them back home and said, look what we did. We destroyed the enemy. We took the life out of them. We killed them. So here was the Ark of the Covenant before Dagon. They were making a laughing stock of the Ark. And when they found the next morning Dagon in submission to God in the Ark of the Covenant, they stood him back up. They went in the second morning. Not only was he in submission, but he was in defeat. Let's see. Submitting to the God of Israel and totally defeated. I want you to think about this. The battle wasn't fought on the battlefield outside somewhere in Ebenezer. The battle was fought behind the scenes. John says to the Ephesians, we're not fighting against flesh and blood, but against the evil, the wicked powers and principalities and forces of darkness. And there is no situation in which God's not already been in. He knew this was going to take place. He's fought that battle before. And he was working covertly behind the scenes to secure the victory for his people. It tells us the Lord's hand, talks about the Lord's hand four times. The Lord's hand was heavy upon the people of Ashdod and its vicinity. He brought them devastation and afflicted them with tumors. When the men of Ashdod saw what was happening, they said, the ark of the God of Israel must not stay here because his hand is heavy upon us and upon Dagon, our God. So they called together the rulers. Said, what do we do? What do we do with this ark? This is terrible. We can't have this here. Well, they said, let's have it moved. So they moved it. But the Lord's hand was against that city, throwing it into panic. So they sent the Ark of God to Ekron. When the Ark of God was entering Ekron, the people said, no, don't bring it here. You know, he'll kill us. We're going to die. So they said, send the Ark of the God of Israel away. Let it go back to its own place, or it will kill us and our people. And God's hand was very heavy upon the city. God's hand being heaviness, the heaviness of God's hand is a sign of judgment, by the way, in the Bible. So judgment was on the Philistines for the way they were treating God's people. And folks, God's a God of love. Why would he do this to these people? Well, first and foremost, because they treated God's people poorly. You know, part of the covenant of God was those who bless Israel will be blessed. Think about that the next time you vote for a president. Those who bless Israel will be blessed. We may not always like what Israel does, but the Bible tells us those who bless Israel will be blessed. The Philistines not only went to war against them, but they defeated them. They killed tens of thousands of Israelites. And then what's worse yet, when they had the Ark of the Covenant of God in their possession and God defeated and destroyed their god Dagon, they still didn't turn to him. Had they turned to God and chosen to worship God and went back to the Israelites and made things right, in my heart, I truly believe God would have spared the Philistines, but they didn't. They wanted no part of God in their lives. All they could see was God was doing bad things. They were blaming it on God, when in all reality, they were getting what they deserved by the just God of Israel. But instead, they said, we want no part of God. Get him out of here. He can't help us. He doesn't have the answers. Think about that in our common, in our culture today, what people are doing with God. They get in trouble. Well, God's not real. He's not answering my prayers the way I pray. He can't be alive. He's not real. Get out of here, God. I want no part of God in my life anymore. And what's funny here is now they're saying, let's send it back to its home place. Get it out of here. Send it back to its own people. Wow. You know, I was laughing last week about this because it's almost hilarious how God is always working behind the scenes. We can't always see him working, but he is working behind the scenes. Dagon had fallen on his face before the ark of the Lord in submission. He was defeated as he fell there with his head and his hands cut off. There was judgment on the people by the God of Israel. And that judgment was the defeat of their God and the distress of the people. The ark was in the Philistine possession, by the way, for 7 months. 7 months the ark was in the possession of the Philistines, and they had had enough of that God. They didn't want anything more to do with him. In the covert operations of God, the enemy was being dealt with as God worked behind enemy lines to secure the victory of his people. They didn't even have a clue what the next day would hold in store, the Israelites, that is. Their God was gone. They didn't have a clue what the next day would hold in store. And sometimes it's hard to see God working on our behalf when we're faced with trouble. We can't assume that the trouble has overpowered God. We cannot assume that this is too much for God to deal with. We watch as evil has its day in our world. All the while, many doubt that God even exists, and we continue to ask, how can God be a loving God when there's so much evil and destruction in our society? But we understand that God is clearly working behind the scenes on our behalf while we're pacing the floor, while we're ranting and raving, while we're worrying, while we're cursing, while we're trying to finagle things and get things to work out. God's working behind the scenes. You see, in his covert operations, because he's God. And he knows every move before it's even made. He knows what's best. Do we know the future? Do we know what's going to happen tomorrow? How many of us know what's going to happen when we walk out of here today? Oh, we have a plan. Well, I want to do this, and we're going to go to lunch. We're going to do this, and we're going to do this. You don't have a clue, because when you walk out that door, a multitude of things can happen. We don't know whether we're even going to wake up tomorrow. We don't have a clue, but God does, see, because this is not his first rodeo. And if we are truly God's children, is there ever a moment that he's not looking out for us? You say, well, wow, this is pretty bad. Things come in threes. Well, I just got the fourth thing. This is really bad. God knows that. He knew it before it even happened. We go into the doctor's office. The doctor says, well, it doesn't really look good. It doesn't really look good. I sat with someone the other day down at Geisinger who had surgery and had a stroke. When the doctors come in, and I'll never forget the look on the doctor's faces. The young doctor had a hard time looking at us because the prognosis was not good. But the doctors left, And we prayed, and this man calmed down as we prayed. And he started to know people and hear people and talk to people later that day. You see? Or maybe we're having trouble in our finances. Let me tell you a cute little story. And this is not just coincidence. A few years back when our kid, okay, a few years back when our kids were in kindergarten, so that would be 15 years ago. Our kids were little and we lived down near Clearfield and we wanted to buy a little pool for the backyard for the kids. At the time, we just didn't have the money to spare. They're not a lot of money, but we didn't have the money to spare. And we decided on one of these that you blow up the edges. It was only knee deep at the time, and that was deep enough for the kids. And in fact, it ended up being the village pool that the older kids would come and we would watch and laugh as the kids would run down the bank and belly flop into the pool. We didn't have enough money to buy that pool, but we had someone out there that every once in a while would give my wife and I a check to support my wife and I and our family. That was part of her ministry and her calling. So as we were talking about buying this pool one spring, the lady came up to me when I was visiting her father and she gave me a check and she said, here, this is for you and your family. Do you know how much it was? It was exactly the cost of the pool. You say coincidence? Ha, absolutely not. Because we had been praying about it as a family. You see, not a coincidence. We think about our food, the food that we eat, the abundance of food that we have in our lives is only by the grace of God. The transportation that we have, we say, well, I don't really have a car now, but there's tons of people that will drive. And in fact, sometimes I've heard of people getting calls of others offering to drive them if they need to go anywhere. God providing our safety. We don't have a clue. We don't have a clue how much God has arranged and worked things so that we had a safe trip to work or to church. You know, in our workplaces, in our schools, in our churches, God's working behind the scenes. He knows what tomorrow's going to bring. In the churches that we were serving out there, they didn't have a lot of money. They were little tiny country churches, but they were great God-fearing, Bible-believing people. And when I got there, shortly before, they had sold one of the churches in their parish. And I said, what did you do with the money? Well, we just put it in the bank to help us pay bills. I said, I'll tell you what, let's tithe 10% of that money. Now, they sold a church and some property. I said, let's tithe 10% of that money. Well, that was a little scary for them. It was a journey of faith. You know what we did? We bought a new furnace for the local Presbyterian manse, a Presbyterian parsonage that needed a furnace and they didn't have money to put a furnace in. The Methodist parish out there bought a brand new furnace and had it installed. You talk about shaking up a community. They could not figure that out. God knew that the Presbyterians needed a furnace. And God knew that we had that money. And he worked things so that they would work for the benefit of the entire body of Christ Jesus. And these two little country churches, one of them happened to have some stocks, some local stocks that someone had given them when they died, invested in one of the local banks. And shortly after I left, I could tell you stories all day about the awesome things that God did in these little country churches, which unfortunately were closing many of them now. Shortly after I left, I heard that the bank stock split and the church is wealthy now. You know, we kept praying, we kept praising, we kept trusting, and God provided every step of the way. The Lord's hand was heavy on the people because they would not turn to him and worship him. He was for them, for the Philistines. God was nothing more than a trophy. Just like for many people today, our Bibles on our shelves at home is nothing more than a showpiece of, look at me, I'm a Christian. Or we come to church. Yep, I got God, I got my buddy with me. You see, Israel probably didn't know the full extent of what the Lord was doing. They just knew that they had been defeated, and now they had nowhere to turn, no one to turn to. All the while, the Lord was engaged with the enemy in a divine covert operation with four objectives here of Almighty God. First of all, to defeat the enemy of his people. Secondly, to demonstrate his love for his people. Thirdly, to remind his people that they have a major advantage. And fourthly, to build their trust in him. The next time you're faced with something that just seems so overwhelming, like you're defeated and you have nowhere to turn, I want you to stop for a moment and think. Why is God allowing this to happen? First of all, he's going to defeat this somehow. Secondly, he's demonstrating his love for me because he's going to provide for me through this. Thirdly, he's reminding me that I have a major advantage. And I have to remember that the Bible tells me I have a major advantage in everything that happens in my life. And fourthly, as God provides and we continue to trust him, it builds our trust in him along the way. Our great and powerful God, Jehovah, has had a plan since before the creation of the world to prosper his people. He's the one who gave Hannah a child. Remember the beginning of the story? There was a childless woman. He gave her a child. That child called Samuel was the one the Lord spoke to about his plan. Remember, that plan was that if anyone in Israel heard it, it would make their ears tingle. He spoke to Samuel. The word of the Lord was absent in those days. Hannah had no children. All of a sudden, Hannah's got a child. God's speaking to that child, making something out of nothing to do a great thing. The Lord is the one who was and is making things right as he works in the enemy camp to confuse the enemy and bring his people victory. That Samuel was the one who would go by the Lord's command, and we'll get to that point, and anoint the one of Jesse's sons, David, to be Israel's greatest king. You see, God was working everything perfect. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and David is our God, and no weapon forged against us shall prosper. Even though it might seem like God's not working, Psalm 121 tells us, I lift my eyes to the hills. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. He will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. Indeed, he who watches over Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. Do you know what those words mean in the ancient language? It means that he'll never get drowsy or he'll never slack off. You see, he watches over us and never sleeps, never slacks off. When you read this part of the Psalms, 120, 121, 122, 124, in this particular area of the book of Psalms, you read song of ascents. These were songs of praise about the glory and providence of God as the people went up to the temple to worship. They were singing them on the day that Jesus came riding in on a donkey, by the way. And one of them, David, wrote, if the Lord had not been on our side, let Israel say, if the Lord had not been on our side when men attacked us, when their anger flared against us, they would have swallowed us alive. The flood would have engulfed us. The torrent would have swept over us. The raging waters would have swept us away. What was David saying? If the Lord had not been on our side, we would have been consumed. We would have been overtaken. We would have been covered up and we would have been removed. Now, I don't know about what you're thinking, but that gives me a mind picture of a dead person. They're consumed, overtaken, then covered up and removed. If the Lord had not been on our side, we'd have been dead. Praise be to the Lord who has not let us be torn. We've escaped like a bird from the fowler's snare. Our help is in the name of the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. We may not see or we may not comprehend, but we can be sure one thing, that our God, the Lord Almighty in battle, is working his covert operations on our behalf. So the next time you're saying, hey, where's God? Know that God's working on our behalf to defeat the enemy, to demonstrate his love, to remind us that we have a major advantage, and to build our trust in him. May that be part of our journey this week as we grow in our faith, trusting in God and giving the battles to him. Let's pray.